You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
No, play that, play that. That was the 95BFM special announcements thing.
It's
the same colour as the That's the Spirit one. Hey, you're tuned to BFM Dry with Johnny and Big Hungry. We're just about to get our favourite history lesson of the week with Professor Peter Lynham. We'll just hit the right sting. That's the spirit. Hello, Peter.
Hello, how's it going, Johnny?
Good, and yourself?
Excellent. No. I'm on holiday, so that is extremely...
Oh, you're on holiday?
Wait.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for slipping out of your sun-drenched scenario to grace us with your knowledge on what is happening. You're taking us to Jerusalem.
I am taking you to Jerusalem.
It's a hot topic at the moment.
It is a hot topic.
What's the history?
So the history, actually... Well, how far do you want to go back?
Years? That's the thing.
you give us what you think is the most relevant.
Okay, so I mean, the immediate presenting thing is supposedly that Trump has made some dramatic step in recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Why would he do that? Why would he do that?
Well, he'd do it because he is indebted to the right-wing evangelical faction in America, and certainly the organizations, Christians for Israel, have been crowing all weekend about the fantastic step that they've been wanting and pressuring for a long time. So he's paid off one of his election debts by doing this.
Isn't it just kicking the hornet's nest over there, though?
Of course, but you could argue that he's in the kind of... I mean, what does it mean? Does it mean anything? I mean, you can argue that this is a much overblown issue in some ways. And so I would say that it's the symbolic value. Because it doesn't actually change anything. Because, I mean, the Jewish Knesset has been meeting in Jerusalem for, shortly after the Six Days War, I think they moved most of the facilities of the Jewish government to Jerusalem, although Tel Aviv is still a big city. But, you know, it actually is not a change of heart of the sort of general tenor of Americans. You know that the American Senate voted to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel in 1995.
Wow.
So, I mean, he already had the legislation there to do it. He simply needed to approve it in effect.
Why? So has that just been sitting there for a while, obviously?
Yeah.
Wow.
For a very long time.
Just an option, just up the sleeve.
And, you know, a number of governments are in practice recognizing Jerusalem, because although the ambassadors tend to meet in where the Senate's, you know, where their embassies are in Tel Aviv, the Russians recognized West Jerusalem a long time ago. Now, there's a difference between West and East Jerusalem. So let me try and fill in since 1948, firstly.
Yes.
Okay. So when Israel was created by decision of the United Nations in 1947, borders were recognized that did place Jerusalem as a dually administered city. So they were thinking of a dual solution of both the Jordanians and the Israelis having some stake in Jerusalem. But then came the war, in which the Israelis had to fight for their borders, and they were driven out of most of the historic part, like the old part, which is east of Jerusalem. And so they more securely held the Mediterranean coast. So that's why Tel Aviv became the capital. But for Jews, I mean, you can argue that the borders that came about in 1948 were the result of warfare. And then the borders that were readjusted in 1967, and which most countries have not recognized as a result of the Six Days War, meant that de facto the Israelis controlled Jerusalem and controlled most of the West Bank. But countries chose not to recognize the Israeli games as being de jure, as a right. But, you know, you can... the case that is generally put in the States, and where this is less controversial than it is in the rest of the world, they would say, well, in 1948, Jerusalem was jointly administered by Jordan and Israel. So you can see that there is a case. So I don't want to say that this is simply an assertion of American power. There is some statement of going back to historic tradition.
Do the Jordanians still have any stake in it?
No, because the Jordanians were pulled out, and the current Palestine authority that controls Gaza and controls parts of the West Bank, only very small parts though, these, especially the Gaza Strip, these were, it created something called the Palestine Authority, which of course exists by the tolerance of the Israelis and doesn't have a very good deal. I mean, it has a really rough deal from the Israelis. But the Israelis begrudge having been forced to make this concession by the great powers and the settlement that came about after the discussions with Egypt. But, I mean, that's where the current issue sort of comes from. Now, can I just take you back a lot further in history?
Right on.
Because if we go back, I've been reading Josephus recently because I found that I've got a first edition of Whiston's translation of the writings of the Jewish historian Josephus. So this is my 1737 edition of this English translation of the work, The Antiquities of the Jews. And The Antiquities of the Jews was written after the Romans seized and destroyed the partial autonomy that the Jewish state had under the Romans until AD 70. Now, it was a partial autonomy. It was under the jurisdiction of the Romans. And before that, going back to the kingdom of King David and the like, you know, you've got a tradition of a strong Jewish state going back a very, very long way. So about 1500, about 1,000, for about 500 years, the Jews were a strong autonomous state. And for Jews who've retained, you know, pretty strong sense of national identity since then.
Mm-hmm.
To try to revive that identity is hugely important for Jews who've survived against Holocausts and plural, and many, many attempts to destroy their independence. So symbolically, Jerusalem means a huge amount to Jews, because the difficulty is it also means a huge amount to the Muslims who seized Jerusalem and Israel from the Romans and from the Roman successors in the 7th century. So they had occupation, this was the Ottoman Empire later, for another 1,000 years. So it depends if you take early claims or not, how you work out with this, but for Jews who, when the State of Israel was created, you know, the original idea was to settle them in Uganda, that the Jews would be happy in Uganda. Can you imagine
Interesting.
That?
It's just, oh yeah, just...
And they wanted their historic territory, where Jews had lived alongside Arabs for many centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Some Jews, although a lot of Jews had lived in Israel. And so they were trying to discover their national identity. And I think Trump's action at the moment, of course, if he used it properly, it's a strange thing that right-wing American presidents have shown more capacity to bring about a peace settlement in lots of places than left. You look at Nixon in China, you can see that right-wing American presidents, because they come across so hard-line, actually can force others to negotiate.
Making sort of tough, gnarly decisions, you reckon?
Yeah, that's right. And because, I mean, does it really mean anything other than symbolism for the American embassy to be in East Jerusalem?
I wouldn't have thought so. Yeah, well, sort of what does it mean going forward for everybody, this move? Like, what can we, you know, is it...
Well, I mean...
Is it worth freaking out about? Like, everyone's kind of freaking out?
In theory, it probably will mean nothing at all.
Okay.
But what it does mean is that the Palestinian Authority, though extraordinarily weak and disorganized and very ineffective in Gaza, nevertheless has a very wide degree of sympathy within the United Nations, especially from lots of ex-colonial states that feel as though Israel is the symbol of the West. I guess Jews are very westernized. It's the one really secular state in the Middle East. So at times their one supporter has been the United States, but that's a pretty powerful supporter to have.
It is.
Now, if there's really going to be peace, actually all sides need to feel secure.
Right.
And
so
could it be that a symbolic statement of the power of the United States' support for Israel's identity would make that the Israelis actually more willing to negotiate on less symbolic acts?
Okay.
Interesting. I guess we'll see.
Most people would disagree. Most people would say this shows a weakness. Mm. It shows that American foreign policy has got no direction at all. It's all dealt with to an internal Christian and Jewish audience. Remember, there's a big Jewish population in New York. Hasn't New York got more Jews than Israel?
Oh, it's grunty there. It definitely is. I got lost in Brooklyn one time, and I was like, oh, I'll just walk back. And then I just was cruising through just Jewish community for, it felt like forever. So, yeah,
it's truly extraordinary.
Mm.
And he's playing clearly to that audience and to the Christian right and doing this. But I'm trying to be positive about.
Oh, well, good on you. You might as well.
We don't want an intifada. You know, we don't. And clearly, some Palestinians would like to call for a war to the death. I do wonder whether they've got the power to actually do that anymore after the last one.
I hope not. Let's not do that.
Yeah. But maybe Palestinians need to recognize Israel as much as Israelis need to recognize Palestinians. And that's always been the tricky problem.
Mutual respect.
And mutual respect doesn't seem to breed in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Right. Good one. That's a good one, Peter. Thank you so much for where are you right now, by the way? You're on holiday.
Me? I'm just sitting in Greyland around a friend's place.
Oh, holiday at home. I like it.
Nice. Yeah, very good. Yeah.
We'll catch you next week, yeah?
I look forward to that. Yes, very good.
Perfect. Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Bye.
John, that was the cutest goodbye I think I've ever heard.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.